fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dan Selke. I'm the editor of WinnersComing.net. I'm here with Daniel Roman, also the editor of WinnersComing.net. Together, we are the two editors of WinnersComing.net, a site where we cover all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc., and so forth. And our podcast is called Take the Lack, where we cover those same things that we talk about them on cameras and in podcast form for your entertainment. Hello, everybody in the chat. Good to see you. Beota410. Good to see you, Fancy Fan. Good to see you, Robert Harris. Good to see you, Martha Lilly. Glad to be here as always. And I'm going to quickly recap something insane that happened last week and set you guys up for what we're going to talk about this week. Because if you didn't know, last week, a Real Housewives-esque feud erupted between Game of Thrones creator and A Song of Ice and Fire author George R. R. Martin and the incredibly respected influential television network HBO and its parent company Warner Bros. Discovery, which is possessed of billions of dollars, where Martin criticized the Game of Thrones prequel show House of the Dragon for changing too much of his book Fire and Blood. I loved it and hated it. I love that we got to follow this proper war of words between these two camps. I love that we're invested in the shows they're talking about. And I love and hate that it's not over. There are new developments as of today and that happened in the rest week. Yes. Daniel, what's the latest on what I'm going to go ahead and call Hot D Gate? We'll try some and see what sticks.
Hot D Gate. Yeah, I mean, that could stick. We'll see. The updates today, we've had a couple of updates throughout the week, so I don't know if we want to go straight today. But today, basically, The Hollywood Reporter published a piece that talked a little bit more about all of this. They also talked about the Rings of Power. So if you've been following the numbers situation over there, there's been some chatter about whether the season's doing good or not. And the Hollywood Reporter piece today is from James Hibbard, the person who did the behind the scenes book for Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So it's very well researched. He's got connections and such. Influential dude, definitely someone to listen to if you like these sorts of shows. So I will get to the first takeaway from the Hibbard report was that an inside HBO source said that executives were, quote, frustrated but not surprised by Martin's blog posts, because he'd been making these issues known in private for quite a long time, which, you know, kind of supports the idea that we talked about this last week. We've written about this. We've seen people like Iron Widow author Jiren J. Shao talk about this online, that this was not an impulsive move from Martin. He tried to resolve these things privately as best he could, and this is kind of a last resort to get HBO's attention. And statements like HBO was frustrated but not surprised kind of back that up. They've been aware of these issues for quite some time. But he also did talk... So Martin hasn't posted a really inflammatory blog post about this since the... the big one, the one that kicked off Hot D Gate, as it were. But he did. Can't believe we're calling it that, but it's going to
still something better comes along. That's what it's called.
Yes. Yes.
I'm open to suggestion. So everyone out there, if you have a better idea. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yes, yes. What would you call this? And yeah, great to see everyone in the chat. I see you over there, Nicole, on YouTube today. Yeah, Benjack, we are going to talk about what he said about Dunkin' Egg. But maybe before we get to that, because I thought that that also backed up this idea that he's being very diplomatic in a in-your-face way. He's fully in his Tyrion Lannister era, I feel like, with some of this stuff. So he published a blog post yesterday, the day before, where he talked about one, his writing, and two, just like, you know, how he's been doing, because he's been really stressed about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you want to run through some of these quotes, Dan? You want me to read them?
Sure, I can do it. I mean, he just wrote about how the one that I remember is that he has been swinging between moods of fury and despair, that he's spending sleepless nights. Yeah. Clearly, this has been bothering him. And again, it not surprising. Like, what I took from the Hollywood Reporter interview was what you said, that it's a confirmation that this was not just an extemporaneous outpouring of emotion. This was an attempt by him, yes, to try and get someone at HBO to listen to his concerns after privately voicing them hadn't really led to anything, hadn't really gotten the House of the Dragon showrunner Ryan Condal and his team to change their course.
Yes.
And they have changed a ton about the book. I'm on Martin's side too, as Fantasy Fan says. He spoiled season three, and I mean, he said something that happens that's in the book. A philosophical question for the world, for everybody: can you spoil something if what happens is already put down in paper and has been for years? I don't think there is an answer to that question, but I think it is at least a gray area. But anyway,
I think it's also worth noting that he put a big copious spoiler warning before he dropped the spoilers. It's not like he just did it thoughtlessly. Like, he made it pretty clear. If you read past this point, we're assuming you want to know what's in the soup and you want to hear about all the nitty gritty details. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure that got HBO's attention. The references to the season three stuff.
But will it work? That's my question. Do you think it'll actually do anything? Do you think Martin's attempts to, I've told you that I don't think you should change this much, cutting nettles, taking Rhaenyra and Alicent and turning them from enemies to friends, taking Daemon from a competent leader to an incompetent doofus. You haven't listened to me when I've advised you to not do these things. Do you think this will actually work? Do you think going public and then deleting it has any chance of actually affecting the direction of House of the Dragon? Or do you think this is doing nothing but bridge burning?
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think, you know, obviously we won't know till things play out, but I think there's a chance this could affect things. So for a few reasons, one is it's just embarrassing for the show, like to have as high profile of an author as George R. R. Martin come out and really express this dissatisfaction, which he never did with Thrones. Like, he grumbled about butterflies in his own words, but like, that was such a unique situation because Thrones is so big and sprawling, because he hadn't finished the books. Like, there were a lot of reasons why Game of Thrones became the situation it did. And I think Martin, like, this is not an author who doesn't understand how the television industry works. Like, he's worked in it. Like, it's important to remember that, like, he was writing on Game of Thrones before Ryan Condal's career started. So in 2014. Whoa. So like, that really puts into perspective, like, the amount of experience, like, he's bringing with navigating these things. Like, he's fully aware, I'm sure, that changing course on something like an HBO show mm-hmm. like this is a fraught endeavor at best. But I think maybe the wake up call, you know, I don't know that HBO is going to be like, just make Martin happy. But I wonder if the wake up call for maybe the writer, like the people working on the show of like, we've really pushed this to the point where like, George is really upset about this. Like he's talking about having sleepless nights. He publicly
fury and despair.
He did talk about vacillating between fury and despair. There's that one barbed comment in the last blog post. My various television projects ate up most of these months. Some of that was pleasant, Dark Winds and the Hedge Knight. Most of it was not
so good. You're spitting bars. It's proper shade. It is old school dictionary definition shade. It is insulting somebody but not actually mentioning them. It's classic stuff. Somebody mentioned the Hollywood Reporter interview. Yeah, where they reached out to him for comment about House of the Dragon, the House of Dragon situation, Hot D Gate, and he didn't mention it at all, but instead talked about how much he was looking forward to A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, this new Game of Thrones spinoff.
Yeah.
And how he visited the set in Northern Ireland in July. He loved what he saw. He complimented the cast. They look like they're walking right out of the pages of his book. He complimented the showrunner, Ira Parker, doing a great job. And didn't mention House of the Dragon at all. Just shade of, like, again, dictionary definition.
Shade by omission.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Well, again, the Tyrion Lannister era fully in effect with this, because what else can he do? Like,
Nicki
he
Minaj
can't
era.
Really go off. So he has to be this kind of, methodical thinking through what he's saying, when he's saying it, how he's saying it. And he knows how the industry works. I am. So a few things about the Duncan Egg thing. One, I'm so happy that he is. Said publicly that how happy he is with what he saw of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms during his set visit to Northern Ireland in July. Because I've been kind of dancing around this cryptically, but I definitely got the impression from some conversations I had in Glasgow that there is a lot of optimism with Martin's team. I did talk to him. Yes. So, yes, I did have conversations with Martin, with his team. And just the overall sense I got was there's a lot of optimism for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms in that camp. So this statement kind of backs that up. And I think this is really savvy of him that the Hollywood Reporter reached out to be like, give us more dirt on HBO and House of the Dragon. And instead, he was like, let me tell you about this other thing HBO is making that I am really excited about. And I think that shows, again, he's not trying to burn the bridge. Like, I saw a pretty funny meme of like, you know, about George having regrets for selling off all of the film rights to HBO. And like, I don't think that's the case. I don't think there could be a better home for this stuff. It's just that the situation for House of the Dragon specifically has gone off the rails. So I thought that was a really good move on his part, actually, to just be like, and also a shade move, but also a very savvy move.
Yeah. As Ben Jack says, he imagines that Ryan Connell wants to repair the friendship with George R. Martin. I hope he does, and hope that leads something good. I don't know. I really don't know what it's going to be like by the time House of Dragons season 3 rolls around, by the time Martin's deal with HBO is up, which he does have one. And I guess it doesn't involve you have to take my advice on shows. HBO lives by the sword and dies by the sword. HBO is a network that gives its television creators, always has, complete creative freedom, which is what allowed the network to make so many groundbreaking series. You think ABC would have done The Sopranos? Do you think NBC would have made Sex in the City? No, they wouldn't. You had to have been a network that allowed you to get away with things that were not done before. Now, that is not always, as we've seen, something that agrees with everybody. Like, this is a good example. It's a weird irony because like a network like Prime Video or Amazon maybe would see this, we're ticking off the author We should do something about that, and tell the creatives to change course. I don't think HBO would, because they have more integrity, and the integrity makes me angry. I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's a tricky thing because, you know, more integrity. It's so hard because they told him things about this season that ended up changing without, it seemed like, his input. But I see what you're saying, though. They're not going to really, you know, tell the show to damage control. And a studio like Amazon, I think you're onto something there, because unless they do. Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. So if all this stuff happens where Martin is basically, you know, blasting House of the Dragon for how much it's gone astray, while simultaneously talking up Duncan Egg, and then Duncan Egg comes out next year. Like, let's remember, this is the next Westeros thing we're going to watch is Duncan Egg. If it is more faithful to his books and a better season of television because of it, I think that might make a pretty good case to HBO to maybe
imagine
listen.
Imagine a Game of Thrones prequel versus Game of Thrones prequel fandom, where if you're in this community, you're either a Knight of the Seven Kingdomser or a lover of Hot D. And these two sides battle on Twitter and on Reddit. The chaos, the confusion, the madness. And George R. R. Martin is championing one. We could be in for a very interesting future.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm excited because there is stuff still on the future. Like, this again, like, I don't think he's trying to burn this bridge. I think he's trying to save it, if anything. Because he's so exhausted, it feels like it's burning already. But there are other spinoffs in the works. I think this interview, like, it's important for the long game relationship to stay good if they're going to do more after A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So there's an Aegon the Conqueror spinoff in the work from Mattson Tomlin, who did Terminator Zero, I think it's called, the new Terminator anime. I think, shout out here, I'm pretty sure this quote from this interview came from Westerosi's. I think they did this interview.
I think you're
on Twitter. They asked about the Aegon spinoff. Mattson Tomlin said that he's spending quite a bit of time with George R. R. Martin talking about Fire and Blood and Aegon, and then said, "For me, it's about making sure that I respect George and I respect the text. And then also, it still has to be a dramatic story. Those characters have to go on a journey. They have to change. They have to go from a beginning to a middle to an end. Figuring out how to do all of that with the clues that the textbook has left for me and go, okay, I'm going to interpret this very real history and try to make it a really vivid show that hopefully people love and don't hate, doing the best I can." How's that make you feel, Dan? Optimistic?
Fine.
Nervous?
I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like, or even if it's going to be. We have no idea that it'll ever make it to screen.
True.
And I'm not going to prejudge Mattson Tomlin's work. I haven't seen this work. Maybe it'll be brilliant.
Terminator Zero is good.
I will say, remember that last week I was talking about how I have this feeling, and I got this from like some of the stuff that Condal said too in his podcast, that some writers tend to fetishize the idea of arcs. Like that quote about like they have to go on a journey. It has to be a beginning and a middle and an end. And I'm like, but does it? Like, I feel like there are certain screenwriters, and like screenwriters especially, when you're writing a season of TV. Damon's a good example in season 2. I listened to Condal's talks on that, and he's like, well, we wanted him to go on a journey, and we wanted to use Matt Smith. And they're like, I get what you're saying, but you could have kept Daemon Targaryen more or less the same character he was at the start of season 2, kept him conflicted, interesting, and we would have liked him more at the end. And you took him on this journey, and the journey was boring, and the end result wasn't as good as what you had when you started. And if taking a character on an arc, on a journey, gets you those kind of returns, then I don't know if you always do need a journey. I don't know if you always do need an arc, especially in a show like this where there's always something happening. Like, in a multi-season show with so many characters, not every character needs an arc every season. You can wait for things to happen naturally. So I think I'm getting into my anti-arc era. I'm starting to think it is a fetish. It's starting to sound like something you learn in screenwriting class that I'm not sure people need. I think something to be said for stasis, something to be said for change, something to be said for biding your time. And I have no idea if any of this will produce good or better results in the Egg and the Conqueror show. But it's been in my mind lately. I'm suspicious now. Whenever I hear someone talk about, we had to send them on an arc, and like, but you don't have to. You're choosing to. And if you are going to send them on an arc, make sure it's one that is entertaining and takes them somewhere that makes the character more, not less interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I very much hear what you're saying, and I think you're right. I think, you know, arcs can be a really good thing. Like, you're right, it is like a screencraft, screenwriting, books as well. Arcs is a big conversation point. And like, you know, you look at one done well, like a Walter White is someone that comes to mind. Like, that character is all about the arcs from where he started to where he ends up each season. That is what makes Walter White work. But you're right, not every character needs that, especially in a story like Fire and Blood, where like every season, that not every character needs to have a big dramatic shift every season. And I think figuring out how to make that work well is, you know, obviously one of the great balancing acts of this. So I don't, you know, a character like Aegon the Conqueror, like who starts out not a king and ends up a king, like he should probably have a pretty big arc. I agree with that.
Most characters are going to naturally change and have natural arcs. That's just going to happen. I guess that's our problem is more like with trying to force one in for think having an arc is like a sacred dictum, that it is something you have to have as a matter of course every season, rather than something that you can trust to express itself if you do a good job writing this. It's going to come out.
Yeah, that's fair. Definitely fair. So we'll see what happens with Aegon. It's still early days on the Aegon the Conqueror show. George also dropped one other fun little tidbit about a canceled Game of Thrones spinoff, which is basically he took to his blog yesterday and or the day before, someday this week. Dude's been blogging a lot. He said he watched My Lady Jane, which is an Amazon Prime show that's kind of a period piece, and he really liked it. It was canceled, unfortunately. So his post is like, oh, that's too bad. It got canceled. But one of the showrunners on that was Meredith Glynn, who Martin said he worked with on one of the shelved Game of Thrones spinoffs. But we don't know which one it was. Any guesses?
My guess was the Flea Bottom show. It's the only one I know for, I think for sure, that was like shelved and no one's ever said, no, it's still happening.
Yeah, totally. And I could see that. So I have seen My Lady Jane. It's a pretty fun show. It takes a the overall like vibe of it kind of reminds me of A Knight's Tale. Like it's that type of medieval fantasy where it's like, it's cracking a lot of jokes and it knows you know it, but isn't this so much fun? I could see that type of humor. Like if you're going to get someone for a Flea Bottom show, like, you know, we don't need like a hard nosed drama in Flea Bottom. So I feel like that's a pretty fair guess, but hopefully we find out at some point.
Hopefully. Some great comments, by the way. Leo, if we have time to talk about the Harry Potter series, I will talk about it. I definitely have thoughts on that, but I know we have some other stuff to get to. Dan, what else are we talking about today?
Yeah, if we get to Harry Potter too, I guess we'll have kind of the hat trick of dramas related to shows and very famous authors. So maybe we'll have to try to pull that off a little bit near the end. Another thing that you know, has been on our radar for a while, and I think is probably time to talk about on the show now, is the allegations against Neil Gaiman. And the reason that we're talking about this week is because it seems like a dam has broken. So for people who may not know, Neil Gaiman, author of The Sandman, American Gods, co-author of Good Omens with Terry Pratchett, a whole bunch of stuff. He's a beloved public figure, fantasy author. People really love Neil Gaiman. In July of this year, a news story broke where two women came forward accusing him of sexual abuse allegations. The way that the reporting happened on that, it didn't get picked up right away by a lot of outlets. There were some issues with that. Maybe we can talk about that later if it's relevant. Since then, three more women have come forward with their own stories about bad encounters with Neil Gaiman. So this ranges from a woman who met him when she was 18 at a book signing. They started a relationship a few years later when he was in his 40s. And she says she submitted to rough and painful sex she neither wanted nor enjoyed. I guess we should trigger warning this. This is going to be talking about some uncomfortable stuff. A 23-year-old nanny who Gaiman allegedly sexually assaulted within hours of their first meeting in 22. Another woman who was, quote, traumatized by encounters with him. Another who lived on his estate in upstate New York, working for him around the grounds. And then after she divorced her husband, was reportedly coerced into sexual situations with Gaiman in order to maintain her living space. He ended up paying her $275,000 for trauma and therapy and then had her sign an NDA. There's a lot of this stuff, and it is a very complicated, messy situation. And now, finally, studios are starting to respond to this, and a lot of larger outlets are reporting on it. So in the past week, The Graveyard Book, which is an animated Coraline type production that was going to be done based on a book of Gaiman's at Disney, was put on pause. And they specifically cited these allegations as a reason why. Mm-hmm. This is the big one. Good sure. Omens season 3 was also put on pause. Good Omens obviously has a really passionate fan base. Just today, right. Gaiman actually offered to step back from the series in order to try to get it moving again, because that was like hundreds of people out of a job all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Dead Boy Detectives, which was probably canceled because the numbers weren't good. That's a Sandman spinoff on Netflix. But I wouldn't be surprised if this was a factor as well. So, Dan, obviously this is a sensitive subject, but what do you make of this situation? Because talking about arcs in real life, this is a pretty big fall from grace for Neil Gaiman.
I never thought of us in real life going on arcs before. I don't think we go on arcs. I think we just have lives. But I mean, we don't know what's going to happen yet. I don't know if criminal charges are going to be levied. My guess is he doesn't come back from this career-wise. This feels like a Joss Whedon moment. A few years ago, Joss Whedon, also a really popular, influential, creative guy behind Avengers, probably the Vampire Slayer, an HBO show called The Nevers, was alleged to have committed inappropriate behavior on his sets over the years. He got taken off The Nevers. He basically was banished out of Hollywood. Again, I don't know what the criminal implications are for Neil Gaiman's situation, but this feels like a big enough scandal that the gay manassance of the past few years, where a lot of his works were being made into movies and shows, not just The Sandman, but American Gods, Good Omens, we talked about The Detectives, that's probably over. It is my guess.
I agree with that.
Is my guess. I mean, try to put him on like the scale of people who have been Me Too'd, from Harvey Weinstein, who's currently dying in prison, on the one end, to Aziz Ansari, who was kind of targeted with, I don't know, a woman said he behaved badly on a date and that kind of blew over. This is somewhere to the far right of the middle.
Closer to the Weinstein. Yeah.
I mean, not Weinstein, but closer. So I think his time as an influential Hollywood producer is probably done.
Yeah, I think at the very least, I think you're right about that. I think the rush to adapt lots of his works, which has been, like you said, like American Gods was half a decade ago. Like, it's been going on for a while. I think studios are not going to rush to do that anymore. And I think that's pretty understandable because this is a pretty big PR problem for them. A lot of the some of the people coming forward have talked about it's not even, for a few of them, not even about criminal charges. It's, oh, this is a pattern. And some of the things he said to some of these people were I've never said this to a person before, but let's level with one another. And then these stories have come out where multiple people have been told those very similar things. Yeah. And the payout I mentioned for someone for their trauma and therapy, there were multiple people who had a situation like that. So like, he's been paying money to essentially keep people quiet and try to rectify these situations. Like, this is going back to the early 2000s. One person who came forward was a book publicist who said Gaiman made an aggressive, unwanted pass at her in 1986 when they were both in their 20s. So the whole thing is these people coming forward have been trying to establish that this is a pattern of behavior. And I think it's pretty damning on a few levels. First, obviously, the allegations, but also, to me, one of the most damning things about this is that Neil Gaiman hasn't said a word publicly since these allegations broke,
but probably through his representatives, right?
Yeah, so that is one of the issues. So there's been some anger in certain circles about why this didn't get reported on sooner, because Gaiman is a beloved, powerful figure, but also the UK based media company that broke this, Tortoise Media, they are a startup. They kind of framed it almost as like a true crime podcast a little in the presentation. And one part of that is they had like Gaiman's account where he responded to things, but it was not very clear where those actual quotes came from. So I don't know if I haven't done all the digging because this requires hours and hours of digging to even get the facts straight, which is part of why I think it wasn't reported on as much until now, when it's a nice succinct way for outlets to say, hey, this studio pulled the plug. Here's why. His responses came from, I think you're right, it either came from a representative or a police record, because there was a criminal case filed in New Zealand that ended up getting dismissed. But he has, you know, Neil Gaiman before this was famously chatty with his fans online. We used to pull quotes from him all the time.
And blog absolutely on the Tumblr.
Well, tweet his blogs, Blue Sky. He was all over. He was very active in a lot of these communities. And personally, I think it's pretty damning that he has not addressed this at all publicly and has basically gone radio silent since July. Kind of says they're hoping it blows over or something. I don't know. Doesn't sit well.
I mean, I don't like to say silence is damning. I mean, because so many things, like, it's very possible he's acting on legal advice. Just when this kind of thing happens, I mean, you know that talking about it usually makes it worse. And in this case, my prediction is he doesn't come back from this career wise. And yeah, I agree with the commenters. Like a lot of his work too. I don't think it'll affect the Sandman as Fantasy Fan asks. I know they're making a second season of that. And I don't think he's that deeply involved in that one. Good Omens was tricky because he's the showrunner of Good Omens. So it's not just about continuing to adapt a book he wrote or extend a book he wrote. He's working on the show. So they got to figure something with that. Like the Sandman comics. I like the Sandman show. So I hope that continues as well. And hopefully it can. But yeah, it's sad. It's a horrible situation. And we'll see where the chips fall. Probably won't know for sure for a while.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, like Jamie Johnson says in the chat, this is upsetting. I love Neil Gaiman's books. And all I'll say to that is you are not alone, Jamie. A lot of people have been kind of going through this because it is a situation of a very beloved figure having some really ugly stuff come out about them. And Yeah, I mean, Dan, for the audio listeners, Dan's holding a copy of The Sandman right now.
It's actually not my copy. I bought this from my friend and never gave it back, but I do love it very much.
Nice. Way to confess that live on the podcast. Does your friend listen? Will they come for? Okay.
I've asked him not to, but Eric, if you're listening, I can give it back, I guess.
But yeah, so that's what's going on with Neil Gaiman. We're going to have our ear to the ground to see what else happens. I assume Sandman season two is going to go forward. They're already filming
it.
Like you said, Dan, he's not show running that. It's very different than Good Omens, where he is very, very deeply involved. But yeah, we'll have to see how that progresses. It seems like we've got a little time here. Do we want to go for the hat trick of drama? Do you want to talk about, we have this on our lightning round, but do you want to talk about J.K. Rowling at all and Harry Potter? Since we're in the freaking weeds anyway.
I have a replacement for that lightning round bit. Don't worry. I'm on that. Oh, do you?
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Really quickly, because Leah brought it up, and just if you didn't know, they are officially casting for the Harry Potter TV show at Max HBO. They're trying to cast Harry, Ron, and Hermione. Open call. They want British Irish kids between the age of 9 and 11 to try and try out. It's a big deal. It almost feels surreal because that is such a big undertaking, such a big IP to this day. They seem determined to go forward with it. It also, and Leo asked about how are they going to deal with J.K. Rowling, and I'm gonna dip my toe into this, even though this is a controversial arena.
I believe in you.
I hope you guys aren't too upset by it. J.K. Rowling, author of Harry Potter, basically in the past few years has gone from being best known as the author of Harry Potter to the self-appointed spokesperson for an anti-trans movement. She's demonized trans people. She goes against all the research. She's been endorsed by the likes of Vladimir Putin. I will never forget the time when Vladimir Putin, who was invading Russia at the time, got on camera and was like, I can't believe they're being mean to J.K. Rowling just because she's saying that trans people are bad. Of course they're bad. I'm paraphrasing Vladimir Putin. Sorry, Mr. Putin. But it's been a very strange few years with J.K. Rowling. Anyway, the word is that they're having trouble casting the Harry Potter show because people don't want to work on a show that has J.K. Rowling, who is a very prominent bigot in such a powerful place. And they're in a corner because she has a famously excellent deal with Warner Bros. Mm-hmm. to have creative input on Harry Potter shows, because she signed that deal back when the Harry Potter books were first blowing up and had sold a jillion copies, and she had the leverage to get that kind of thing. And now they can't really take it away from her. So like, they're in a situation where it would probably be best for the show going forward if they were able to kind of cut her out of the process. But I don't think they can do that because she has control over those kind of decisions. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. That's going to be another very interesting one.
Yeah, it absolutely will be. The safe studio thing would be to distance themselves from her. It's such a weird thing because like she did make that series, obviously, like I have strong feelings about like separating an author from their work, but like at the same time, like she is kind of made being the poster child for anti-trans rhetoric, like her life's mission now, like she rarely talks about anything else.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
In public, at least, like online, on her social media platforms, in articles, like she rarely discusses anything but this. To the
it
point
is
where,
her
like,
primary she issue is current for several years.
Yes. Yeah, and she is, I believe, currently involved in a lawsuit in France because she
Iman Khalif sued her. Yeah, the Olympic boxer.
Yeah, the Olympic boxer who Rowling called a man and got a hate storm on this person, and like. She's she's a woman. She's from Algeria. It's not even legal to be trans in Algeria.
It was so
which shows
nuts.
The full disconnect that we're talking about here. This is not, we're not just trying to shade J.K. Rowling. That really shines a light on, you're just all the way gone off the train at this point. And yeah, what does HBO do about that? Because again, this is just gossip that we've seen floating around online in some Hollywood circles, but that they're having trouble getting people to even meet with them about gossip, this show because of J.K. Rowling. So we'll see. It is interesting days.
Well, one thing I wanted to add is circling back to our earlier discussion of why I made that point about HBO has alleged integrity, so they wouldn't disturb their creatives. I will say HBO is going through some changes since Warner Bros. Discovery integrity. We don't know, but we've seen HBO really embrace franchises recently. We got a Dune show coming up. We got several Game of Thrones spinoffs in development. We got The Last of Us, a video game adaptation. We got The Penguin coming up this month, which I just got screeners for. All right, Colin Farrell, Penguin.
Oh, nice.
And they've managed to maintain to this like a pretty high level of quality so far. But part of me is worried that you can only dabble in kind of like the big IP arena for so long before a studio head starts rethinking the HBO gets complete creative control approach and starts to say, we're investing a lot of money in this. We need it to go this way. I don't think it's happened quite yet, but I do wonder, the more HBO embraces big IP, the more in danger the HBO method is. But we'll see how that shakes down in the future. And Harry Potter's a part of that. All these things are a part of that.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So we will obviously have our ear to the ground. We'll see how all this stuff progresses. Make sure to keep an eye on winteriscoming.net, where we will be posting about this every day. Make sure to like and subscribe if you like what we're doing here, because we'd love to have you back. Dan, shall we move on to the section of our show where we talk about what we're watching, reading, and otherwise consuming? How you feel?
Sure. Why not? Let's do it.
Unless you have anything else you want to add about Rowling, because I do not. Okay.
Hit me up.
Well, Dan, and all of you out there, what are you watching? I'm throwing it to you first.
Cool. I'm about like halfway through The Shadow Rising, the fourth Wheel of Time book.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to reread that. And then you and I are going to have like a video or a crosstalk or something about it, because I want to move on to the next one.
Ready for it.
I started to watch Fargo. That's the kind of the new thing I picked up is Fargo on FX.
Oh, cool.
Really good. Really good. I'm probably the first season, but it's quite excellent. Just good, tight, taut drama starring Bilbo Baggins as a Minnesotan dweeb with an "oh, you betcha" accent, trying to pull that off. I'm really liking it a lot. I got the Penguin screeners, so I'll be back next week, maybe with a little insight into that. And of course, still watching The Rings of Power and still feeling extremely whelmed.
Yeah, Rings of Power, you know, I don't want to shade it too bad. Rings of Power has just got so many haters. Bad. I'm having an okay, like I'm enjoying all the time I'm spending watching it. I'm not really thinking about it much when I'm not watching it. It's kind of where I'm at. But yeah, still watching that. I watched a Netflix show called Chaos that was pretty good. It's like a Greek mythology. It's kind of like American Gods, but like set in Greece, as if the Greek gods still ruled Greece in the modern day. Jeff Goldblum is Zeus. Stephen Delane, Stannis, is Prometheus. He's hilarious. He also narrates. He narrates the show. So most of the show, he's like chained like in a bathing suit, chained to a cliffside, just like Stephen Delane talking. I'm trying to think of who else is in this show. It's got Aurora Perrineau plays Eurydice. She was Caleb's daughter in the last season of Westworld. So I enjoyed that show a lot. Jeff Goldblum is just like aces, like chef's kiss. He's just so funny as Zeus. But yeah, that show was great. I'm also playing Star Wars Outlaws, which is the new Star Wars game. Yeah, it's fun. It didn't get great reviews, but yes, there's lots of pew. You have a cute little pet buddy named Nyx who you can have do stuff. It's a lot of fun. I rewatched both Solo and The Last Jedi. My take is that Solo is a better movie, actually, which I would never have expected to say before watching them. And lastly, still reading The Gods Below by Andrea Stewart. Loving it a lot. Kind of like if Andrea Stewart wrote something with more Elden Ring and Mistborn vibes. Very dark compared to her last books. Enjoying it a lot. And speaking of dark things, I got to show this off. So I have been writing a lot about George R. R. Martin.
Yes, we all have.
Because
it's been that kind of week.
Yes, it has been that kind of week. But our interview with George R. R. Martin is going up this weekend, and we have been previewing pieces from it throughout this week. One of the things from that interview that stood out to me was, so I also talked to Rhea Golden, who is Martin's like longtime minion art director. She's adapted a few of his short stories as graphic novels. Mm-hmm. And one she talked about a little bit when I was there, that I read the short story years ago, so long ago that I forgot everything except for the very large details of it. But after talking to Rhea, I went home and I got her graphic novel adaptation of it.
Cool.
The story Meat House Man. Have you ever heard of this, Dan?
No.
It is infamously one of the most fucked up stories George R. R. Martin has ever written. It's about a young man coming of age on this planet where they utilize reanimated corpses for everything from manual labor in terrible conditions to brothels called meat houses. So corpse brothels. It is a messed up book. And I forgot just how like searingly bleak the ending of this is, because the story is all about this young man trying to find love in this, like with a human, hopefully, because that's meat nice. House brothels. In this really messed up place. And it really did bring me back to read something that, like, there's a lot of his actual text in this. Like, Rhea did a really good job with the adaptation of it. Just the way he writes about love at the end and the truth and the lies of love is just like classic George R. R. Martin. So good.
Very cool.
But also, is there anything really good in the world, is kind of the feeling walking away. But yeah, really interesting story. This was like $5 on Amazon, this comic.
Meat House?
Meat House Man. Yeah. This is a throwback, because this is from, I think, the 70s, maybe early 80s. Martin wrote this 80s. He wrote this short story in the 80s. Rhea Golden adapted it in 2014. It was a Hugo nominee that year for best graphic story. And yeah, just like infamously one of his darkest, most messed up stories.
Yeah, so, I'm intrigued.
If you're curious. Yeah,
I am kind of curious.
Worth a read. Guard your heart.
Great comments some great comments from you guys. A couple of people recommended Slow Horses. I think Ben Jack did. I've heard enough about that at this point. But I feel like I should try to check it out. But like, I have just this giant backlog of stuff. But a lot of folks seem to love that
Fox
one.
Freddie Fox is in it. And Olivia Colt.
Well, there you go. End of discussion. A couple of folk talking about Rings of Power, how they're enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I have to kind of temper up my expectations a bit. I don't hate it. I think it's nice. I think it's good. I'm looking forward to the end. I think I've lowered my expectations a bit, that I don't expect utter greatness from it. But who needs utter greatness? Utter greatness is overrelated. And then somebody else said they were watching Terminator Zero, which I'm also glad folks are enjoying that.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel. Should we go on to
that?
You do. Should we go on to the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go over stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second takes, no more, no less. We shall be buzzed
to Rivian
if we fail. Cool. I already replaced the one.
Sounds good. Okay, so I'm going to ask you this first.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Please do.
Okay, so both sad news for all three MGM Plus subscribers in the world. Both The Winter King and Beacon 23 were canceled.
Yeah, so if you don't know, there's a streaming service called MGM Plus, and on that streaming service, there are TV shows called Beacon 23, starring Lena Headey from Game of Thrones as a sci-fi lighthouse keeper, and The Winter King, an adaptation of Bernard Cornwell's The World of Chronicles, a book series that I really love. They're both canceled. I don't think anybody was really watching them, so I can't say I'm shocked, but it's too bad.
I will never understand why it's not just on Prime Video, those shows. Amazon owns MGM.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Like, why?
I agree with you. All right. Out in the cinemas, Daniel, Beetlejuice is demolishing the box office. Brought in $145 million globally, the biggest opening day gross of director Tim Burton's career.
Yeah, Beetlejuice with Winona Ryder. Michael Keaton's back. Yep, this is the dog that was very loud. He's not very big. Jenna Ortega. It's doing really good. It's getting great reviews. People seem to be really liking it. Very happy for Tim Burton that it is seemingly, you know, it's his biggest opening day ever for a movie. Hell yeah. Halloween's back, baby. Okay. Oh, this is a fun one. Beyonce, noted musical genius Beyonce, cultural icon, she watches House of the Dragon.
And this ain't Essos. Ain't no hold on. Yeah, Beyonce said that she watched House of the Dragon. That's really it. That's the entire story. Beyonce was interviewed and she's like, I watched House of the Dragon now. And the Chives are Inside Out 2. And I'm like, all right, cool. I wonder what her opinions are on Rhaenyra and Alicent getting together. I wonder how much she'd like the Battle of the Rift. Maybe she'll make the next album about it. Okay, Daniel.
Yes.
Ian McKellen, who played Gandalf in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogies, both of them, maybe coming back as Gandalf in the new Hunt for Gollum movie, which is actually, according to him, going to be two movies.
I'm just going to stay silent because that's how much I hate this.
What's bad for podcast?
If the Hunt for Gollum is two movies, it just feels like, did we learn nothing from The Hobbit? That was three movies made out of one very short book. It makes me, everything about The Hunt for Gollum makes me nervous. I wish they would cast younger people to play it. I wish it wasn't happening. It's just so that Warner Bros. Can keep the rights. Carrying on.
Okay, carry on.
Sorry for anyone excited for The Hunt for Gollum. This is cool news that should surprise no one because Shogun kicked all the ass. Shogun, the very well-received FX show, won 14 Emmys this week, breaking Game of Thrones' record for most creative arts Emmys in a single year.
Yeah, congrats to Shogun. That show was great. 10 episodes adapted from this old James Clavell book. I loved it. I love watching it. I thought it was technically perfect. Thought it was dramatically epic. Thought all the characters went on really great arcs. And I don't know about that second season, but I loved the first. And I'm glad it's getting recognition. All right, Daniel. The second half of the seventh season of Outlander is coming, and Starz put out 25 new images, including this one of characters I don't know named Jealous and Dougal.
Jealous.
Why is that worth noting?
So Starz released a bunch of images. This is it a spoiler? I don't know. They released it in a press photo, so I'm saying no. Dougal McKenzie and Galus were very important characters in early seasons of Outlander. Galus was a fellow time traveler. Dougal was, I think, Jamie's uncle. He was related to Jamie. They both died, so we don't know how they're coming back, but they are going to be in the second half of season 7, which is exciting. That gets me more excited than anything I've seen about Outlander in years. Wow. It's a big deal. Telling you. All right. This is news fresh off the street. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings director Destin Daniel Cretton is apparently he's in talks to direct Spider-Man 4 with Tom Holland.
That's pretty big. Yeah, because this guy, Destin Daniel Cretton, was originally going to direct, I think, the new big Avengers Kang movies. And then they had a whole cluster happen and Jonathan Majors left and they brought in Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom. And now they're reformatting those. And they brought the Russo brothers back. So now he's going to direct Spider-Man 4 instead. Ooh, Marvel is in a restructuring period. Has been for like years now. And we'll see what happens. All right, Daniel, we're coming in on the end here. We're just talking about this. Although there have been reports of low ratings for The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Amazon's here to reassure us it got 40 million viewers in its first 11 days of season two. Good news, bad news?
Yes. We don't even know news, really. I'm happy for everyone that wants to celebrate this. I don't blame anyone who looks at it skeptically. The big takeaway here is that in our age of streaming, streamers put out whatever number sounds best at any given time. The 11-day number, they did it just because the reports were starting to spread. It wasn't doing well because it's had something like a 50% drop from season one, I think. So
according to like these third-party numbers.
Yeah. It's interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on the Rings of Power numbers as they go on, but right now, it's still airing. So if you're enjoying it, watch it and help the show do good.
Cool. And that is our show, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time to talk all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, dragons, dogs, swords, spaceships, lasers, robots, and et cetera, and so forth. Also, download us in podcast form. You don't have to watch us, although that is, you know, your great privilege and see our faces. You can just hear our voices at the gym, in the car, doing the dishes. Where to listen to your podcast at iTunes, Apple Music, YouTube Music, wherever. And visit Winter's Coming. Why don't you? Why not? What's going to happen? We write about fun things over there. You could subscribe to us. You could like us. You leave a comment. You guys are already way ahead on that one. And for next week, I'm going to put out this challenge. Beyonce, what do you think of Hot D-Gate? If she gets back to us, we'll share her response next Wednesday.
Nice.
Bye, everybody. See you then.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.